Welcome to Electronically Yours with Martin Ware.
Hi, it's Martin here, Electronically Yours, as always. Today's guest is somebody I'm pretty sure I bumped into in Primrose Hill from time to time, because she lives in Camden, and we must have bumped into each other on Top of the Pops from time to time, and maybe even on various 80s festivals and stuff. I'm pretty sure we have met before. Her name is Jenny Bellstar from the Bellstars, originally. That's her professional name. Her real name's Eugenia Mathias. She and the rest of the Bellstars had a lot of success in the early 80s, which is quite interesting because they came out in a period where ska and rock and pop and Latin and blues and reggae all kind of got mashed up, and record companies were willing to take a risk on these kind of genre-bending things. And Jenny was a beautiful girl. It was in, I suppose, round about that time is when Culture Club was signed up as well. And this kind of London style, kind of street style thing with different styles of music was very much popular with people at that time. And of course, their big hit, Aiko Aiko, was massive and was featured on various films and syncs. So here she is, my girl, Jenny Bellstar. Well, you need to tell me and the podcast listeners what you're up to currently.
Oh, okay. So, what? That's the question? Oh, far away. Well, yeah. The question is, what am I not up to, my darling?
Oh, there
you go. That's the thing. Well, first of all, on the thing that's not the music, I do charity, and right. We feed the homeless. Feed quite a few thousand people every day, 6 days a week, and we do it mostly unfunded. We have, I'm the ambassador. I've been the ambassador for many years. We've got, Chrissy Hine is our patron. You know, remember Chrissy Hine?
Yeah, of course.
She's a lovely woman. And she's very generous. She's very cool. And she's always got some great ideas. And then we just have the support of loads of people. In fact, funny enough, Boy George just called up a couple of days ago and he says, well, I want to do a knees up, because some of the people that run the thing are Harry Christians. And so he loves all that. So
yeah, of course.
So we're all going to have a little knees up.
Maybe next week. Where is the charity based?
The kitchen's based in Camden,
right.
Somerstown, and the place that we want that we're going to have the knees up is in Holborn. So that's that. So there's that. So it's always music, even if it's charity. We're still doing the kind of music thing. And then on the side of the music, I don't know if you ever remember a lady called Elizabeth Westwood. She did Sonic Boom Boom Boy, and yeah, she had a hit in the 80s. She had a few hits, and then she was in a band called Westworld. So I'm doing something with her called Bad Barbie, and it's where we. So it's
That's
where we.
Right, I've seen this online. This video where you have a go at people, right?
Is that what we do? No. We're not quite having a go at people. But what happened? Well, yeah, I suppose we do really at some point. But we had a radio show. Unfortunately, it's defunct due to the rising license fees, either from the record companies or PRS. I don't know which one it is, but they put this extortionate. It's gone from 700 to like 12 grand license fee within a year, and that says something. That's not good. And so, of course, it's defunct. A few people have. It's been bad for a few people.
Right.
And a few popular people as well. Now, who runs TWR, Totally Wired Radio, is a guy called Eddie Piller. I don't know if you know him.
I know Eddie, yeah, he's an old mate. Yeah.
He will tell you more about it than I do. He's quite political in that realm. So, and then outside of that, I'm doing something. So me and Liz are doing the Bad Barbie thing still, because we still have music that we're going to be doing. We're just going to be recording a track in a couple of weeks' time, given to us by a guy, a bass player, a fantastic friend of mine, called Douglas Wimbush. Do you know Dougie Wimbush? He's a very cool bass player, and he's done a lot with Adrian Sherwood, who's one of my dearest friends, but no, he's in a band called Living Colour. Do you ever know Living Colour?
I remember Living Colour. They were great. I really enjoyed
the bass player. He's a bass player of that, but he's been a friend of mine for loads of years, and he gave me a track, and we're going to use that as our signature track. And then on top of that, I do stuff with Adrian Sherwood, and I do stuff with and new loads of people. I mean, one of the guys from Bad Man is the original guy. I've done stuff with him. I work with Lee, which is the person I suppose who called you up. And yeah. I do exactly what you do. I do the 80s circuit, isn't it? It's fantastic, you know. And then I've just finished an album with a guy called Matt, and that's my last kind of album I'm going to do with anybody, I think. I work with a band called Pun. I mean, the Mystic Dems, and I'm doing a play.
Wow.
Which I know, with my friend Martin and Alison, and I know that Nick Jones from The Clash, he's involved in it too.
Oh, so, fantastic. Oh, my God.
I don't know if I've left anything out, but if I
no,
have...
No, no, no. I mean, no, it's not a test. It's all right. I'm just interested to what you're up to now. Well, let's talk about the history of the Bell Stars, because obviously that's a big part of your life, as it was at that point anyway, and how that all started. How did that all come together? Was that a natural kind of construct, or was it a record company who put it together, or
no,
how did it all happen?
Well, I don't know if you know that they were a band before the Bell Stars. Did you know that? They were a band. Can you hear me, honey?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they were a band called the Body Snatchers. And what happened was, I think two of their members had left. Anyway, here's the fairy story. You're going to love that. I'm going to try and keep it really concise.
You know? No, you don't have to keep it brief. We've got an hour. You ramble.
Oh, we've got an hour. Okay. In that case, get the fiddlers out and everything. And we're like... Anyway, so what happened was, I'm going out with a guy called Paul. Doesn't make any sense right now, but it will.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm living in Fulham, somewhere, one of these places. And I'm hanging out in a pub. I've got a few friends in there, but they're not real great friends. They're just acquaintances. And this one girl came up to me. She said, "Jenny," she said to me, "I'm going to be in the studio." She said, "Come and give me some support." And I was like, "Well, what am I going to do?" And she said, "No, just stand there and be there with me. I just need the support." So I went reluctantly because I had some kind of sore throat laryngitis.
Right.
Anyway, we get to the studio. It's in Waterloo. Met a really nice guy there called Ian. I think he must have been doing the production of it all. It was a cover of a track called Ico, Ico, Ico.
Yeah.
My grandma and your dad.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was in the studio and I was just sitting and standing at the console with the guy. We're chatting away. And I was just watching all these people going in and out of the studio. The lead singers, this, that, and the other. And then my friend, she goes in. So there's my support there. And then the guy turned around. I think his name was Ian. He turned around and said, "Can you sing?" And I said, "Don't be so ridiculous." I was like, "I can't sing." I said, "Anyway," I said, "I've got a cold." I said, "I've got something wrong with my throat." He said, "Your speaking voice sounds great." I said, "Really?" He said, "Give it a try." And I just said, "Well, I don't know about that." And I wasn't happy about it. But I thought, "All right, I'm going to show you that I can't sing." So I went in there and I did the backing vocals. And I came outside again and I said to him, "I told you can't sing." He said, "On the contrary," he said, "I want you to do the lead vocal." And I said, "What's the lead vocal?" I was so green. I didn't know what the lead vocal was. So anyway, the other girls had gone and he said, "Look, give it a try." So I gave it a try. Well, that was that. I went home. I threw the cassette because back in those days it was cassettes. I threw the cassette at my boyfriend. I said, "You'll never guess what I've done today." So I threw it to him. He said, "I didn't know you could sing." And I said, nor did I. So the next thing you know, seriously, Martin. So the next thing you know, that was that night. The following morning, I kid you not, he gets a phone call from his ex-girlfriend that was in the band, the Body Snatchers, and calls him up. I don't know why she did it. Calls him up and says, Paul, it might be a long shot, but we're looking for a dusky coloured skin."
Oh, right.
You can't say that these days. No, a dusky coloured skin, female, obviously, lead singer. If you know of anybody, let's know. You know, let me know. He said, "She's sitting right next to me." She said, she just came in with a cassette yesterday. And then she said, "What does she look like?" And then she said, and back in those days, I had an afro. I used to wear pretty shirts and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Velvet jackets and miniskirts. And then she said, "I know her. She hangs out with Gaz from Rock and Blues. She's always at Gaz's Rock and Blues." He said, "Yes." So she'd send her down. Well, I'd never been to an interview, you know, one of these things in my life. But, you know, the rest is history. That's how I got. That's how I got.
That's quite a story, isn't it? I mean, it's quite.
It is a story, isn't it?
It's like fate. Mm. And how old were you at that point?
21.
Jesus, what a break to get.
I know.
You make your own luck, right? So that's.
Well, I didn't even know. I wasn't even trying. I didn't even want it. And so I didn't want. I'm not being ungrateful. Don't get me wrong, because I'm really glad now that I did it. I mean, I could have gone down the road and said, "Oh no, I don't really want it." Oh, this, that, and the other. But I just went with the flow. It was almost like a natural thing, Martin.
Meant to happen. Yeah.
Yeah, it was just a strange thing to do, and it was supposed to happen, I suppose.
And what year was this?
That was in 1980.
80. You see, everything was up in the air then, wasn't it? In the post-punk period, it was like, you know, people who were coming from that kind of genre bending kind of thing, you know, like ska and reggae and pop, and everything was all thrown together, and we had it was such a great time. And also record companies were willing to take a risk.
Mm-hmm.
And you could actually get money out of them. Can you believe it? Yeah,
I was saying to somebody yesterday that I feel so sorry for the really talented artists that are coming through today. They didn't have what we had, Martin. You know, exactly what you've just said there. Everybody, there was almost fire. There was fire in the belly of the scouts from the record labels.
Yep.
There was fire in the belly of the artists to want to go out and do something amazing. And you know, and be the next, you know, the next time, like, you know, Elvis Presley, Sex Pistols, you name it, whichever changeover that was that made, you know, that thing. And it was vibrant. We were so lucky. Really, really vibrant. Yeah, yeah. And I'm so glad that I was part of that scene then.
Oh,
you know, I wouldn't
too.
Want to be part of the music scene the way it is just coming in now, because... Yeah.
It's very tough. Do you do any teaching by any chance?
I do. Why did you ask that?
Well, I do teaching. So I do a lot of mentoring for young people. And I'm in.
So did I.
Yeah, I'm part of the Ivers Academy and all that stuff. And I do all that stuff. But anyway, I feel like I a bit like you, that we have to give back the benefit of the luck that we had and our experience. And we have to support young people in a very difficult period, I think, at the moment in music, because of the rapacious record companies who are ripping us all off. Anyway, let's not go down that
road. Don't get me started. Because
I know. We'll be here all day.
I'm very political online. But
so your taste in music at that point, so you went to Gazza's Rock and Blues and various clubs and...
Mm-hmm.
Now, so what was the range of music that you were that was your favourite stuff at the time?
Well, it was a mixture, because my mother was from the 50s, so of course I'd listen to 50s music as well.
Oh, right. Okay.
And so, you know, when they have that resurgence, it's like that thing you just said a minute ago about the ska. Well, we had ska when I was going to school. You know, we had like the Desmond Deckers and this, that, and the other. When I was going to school, so this is the second resurgence. By the time I'm in the 80s now, and I'm doing shows with Madness, and in fact, I went out with a guitarist from Madness for 7 years. We nearly got married, and we've remained extremely good friends. In fact, he was around here last week. So
that's nice.
But you know, so I have a lot. I have an eclectic mix already. I used to I was born in the 50s and listened to my mother's music. But then, of course, as I'm growing up, I'm in the 60s. So I'm listening to, you know, I'm listening to the likes of Jimi Hendrix, Jim Morrison, all these guys. I love them. I also was listening to bubblegum pop music.
Yeah,
because you listen to Dave Clark 5 and you name it. Ha ha, said the clown. Who did that track? Whoever did that track was my favourite band at the time. The Move. Anyway, fantastic bands, but all of those bands I listened to. And then, of course, you know, and along with that, because I wasn't living too far away from Carnaby Street, was the fashion.
Yeah.
So the fashion went with the clothing. I mean, and in the 60s, I mean, you couldn't. It was one of my favorite favourite because everything was colourful and vibrant and fabulous and all modern. It was just amazing. And then, of course, it just and then as I grew up, then the Scar thing. The first lot of the Scar movement was with us. So I'd say, you know, by the time I got to Gaz's Rockin' Blues, and I was now no longer a teenager, but at the age of 20, in my 20s, you know, I was involved in the resurgence of that. You know, I was involved in hanging out with the likes of the Stray Cats and all those kind of people.
Oh, that's you're too cool, of. Too cool. Year were you born?
I'm 57.
So I was born in 56. So I'm not trying to age shame anyone or anything. You don't look it, by the way, but you look great.
Thank you.
It's just, I think, the influences of the people from our, that kind of 56, 55 to 58 kind of period are really significantly different, because at the when we were in our early teens, it was the hippie revolution, and it was that kind of post-hippie psychedelic revolution and all that fantastic kind of psychedelic soul thing that was going on, as well as the reggae and the ska, and mixed up with prog rock and pop.
Name it. We were so lucky.
Really? I couldn't agree more. I wouldn't want to have grown up in a different period, I don't think. In fact, my daughter, who's 27, often says to me, she's born out of time, she thinks, you know. She is so envious of the fact that I grew up in the 80s and had my success then.
I
think a lot of young people feel that. Do you have children?
No.
No.
No, but, I mean, unfortunately, I don't. If you read my book, then you'll understand why I don't have children. So,
all right.
By the way, I'm an author as well. That too.
Sorry, say that again. It glitched.
I'm an author. If you read my book, you'd understand why I didn't have any children, because I had them at the age of 10. I was really the mother of my brothers and sisters, were six of those, and so I spent a lot of time being a mother to them. And it kind of put me off being a mother, you know, for the rest of my life. I didn't want to do that. I didn't do that by then.
Oh, right. Okay. I think it's a noble thing to... I wouldn't change the fact I've had children, I have to say.
No, well, why would you?
No, it's been a beautiful and instructional thing for me. It was a rebirth to a certain extent. But... you know, I'm impressed with the list of people that you've worked with. I mean, you work with the system, right?
Yes.
I love the system.
Wow.
They were a big influence.
How do you know I work with the system? Where did you find that information from?
It's on Wikipedia.
Is it?
Yeah, I think so.
I didn't even know I was on Wiki.
But that was a big influence on and the stuff we used to program and all the stuff. I mean, they just sounded like no one else. What did you do with them?
We did. I was in a band called Dance Like a Mother, and it was just the two of us. And there's a friend of mine called Ian Flutes. I don't know if you ever came across him. Anyway, he was a really good friend of mine, known since I was 15. And him and another guy called Ed Bicknell. Do you know Ed Bicknell?
Ed Bicknell. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Well, Ed used to manage Dire Straits and stuff. Known them since I was a teenager. And I went to, I went to Ian when I said, this is after the Bellstars finished. And I said, I'm working with, he said, what are you doing? So I said, I'm working with this guitarist, Melissa, and we just witnessed a few songs. And he said, let me have a little listen. So I had a cassette with me, another cassette. I had a cassette with me, and he said, these are brilliant. So he said, make sure you've got your passport. He said, we're off to New York at the weekend.
Get away.
I thought he was joking. I thought it was joking. And he wasn't. He was serious. And I said it to my friend, and she said, maybe he's not joking. I said, you never know with him. Anyway, we went to New York, and we met up with a guy called Gary Kerfest. Do you know him? Gary Kerfest.
No, I don't.
He's dead, unfortunately. Yeah. Well, we went out there. What was your question, by the way? I can't remember what your question was.
Do you know, I can't remember. We'll just FaceTime. Right.
Yeah. No, and that, thank you very much for that, because I would never have gone around the houses. And so then we went to New York, and that is when we met Gary Kerr first, who then said, right, Dance Like a Mother, your first single is going to be You Ain't So Tough. And you're going to do it with a band called System.
Wow.
You are in my system.
Oh, I love that song.
Yeah, that's a great track. And so what was it? Is it Mick Murphy and... Oh, I can't remember the guy's name. Anyway, wonderful guys. And that's how I met Dougie Wimbish, because he came and played bass. And then the next time I saw Dougie was when I was living with Chrissy Boy from Madness, and he had my number, and he called me up and said, Jimmy! I'm like, what's happening? He said, I'm playing with the Rolling Stones, man. I'm like, man, okay. So that, and we've been friends ever since.
That's man. Great story. And you work with Randy Jackson, is that right?
Yes. Well, if you knew I worked with Randy Jackson, then I worked with Preston Glass. It was Randy. Oh man, whoa! Well, if I've got some amazing pictures of all of us together, I've got to put them up one day. And because we take pictures all the time, and he was very big then, back in those days. But such a jolly character. He's a wonderful man, a really lovely person, along with Preston Glass. And who they didn't know was ridiculous. I mean, we were working with, another guy, Narada.
Oh, yeah. Listen, yeah. One of my favourite producers of all time.
Well,
he's amazing.
Well, he was in, so we went to Marin County to do an album with them.
Right.
And so it was all of us, the three of those. But you said somebody walk in, President would call somebody up to play extra guitar or whatever. And who would it be? It would be, you know, I can't remember the bloody name now. He's so famous, I can't remember him. But, But, you know, we had Larry Graham.
Oh.
Larry Graham on our journey. And then we were doing Private Number, you know, you can get my private number. Anyway, so I said to one person, I said, it's not very cool. Do you think it's very is a cool thing to do to cover someone's song and then you haven't asked their permission? So he chucks a piece of paper at me. He says, here's his number. Then give him a call. I'm like, what did he say? Give the guy a call. You know, so. I called him, what was his name again? Oh, he's a green onion. What's his name?
Wait, sorry.
Huh? He did Green Onions. I can't remember his name.
Green Onions.
You do know who I'm talking about.
I do. I don't know.
Anyway, him.
Moving on.
Yeah. We're going to be kicking ourselves afterwards. Going, oh, I remember the name now. Anyway. and I called him up and he thought it was really sweet that I called him up.
Booker T.
Right. He was such a cool guy. He was so nice on the phone. They said, Joe, go on, Jenny, call him up. He'll think it's really quaint. And that's exactly what he thought it was because of the English accent, everything else. He said, no one's ever done that to me before. Ask my permission. Yeah.
No, nobody does nowadays.
These were the first.
What music are you making at the moment then? I mean, are you doing any new stuff?
Yes, I do. And Martin, everything I do is new. It's very rare that I'll do a cover because I get bored with covers because I did it in the Bell Stars. And it's, I was all for doing our own stuff. I preferred our own stuff. Don't get me wrong, because Ico was great for us. And I will never, ever, Ico was the stepping stone for what I do today, 100%. You know, but what happens, Martin, is I don't play an instrument. But I am really excellent at melodies, and I'm a writer.
Yeah,
you know, and I write, and any concept you can give me, I'll write. Like that's what I do. I'm rubbish at everything else, but that's what I'm. The main thing is that I am good at, and that is creating something out of I write a lot of poetry, and I.
Oh, beautiful. What have you got coming out soon? Anything?
I've got this album coming out, but the thing is, again, it's like the record company things, you know, do you have a record company anymore? You have to go out and get yourself distribution gigs, deals, or, you know, this is what I'm saying. If you, even at the younger stages, it's a very few people that get that through that open window. And you have to be a certain kind of artist in order to be able to, and adhere to certain rules that the record company give you. You didn't have the freedom, Martin, that we had.
Oh,
we
God.
I was on Stiff Records, for crying out loud. Do you know what I mean?
Listen, you're not going to get playlisted. You're not going to get signed without you've got massive metrics and numbers and all that bullshit, which I think is a false god to be worshipping, frankly. But anyway, don't get me started.
Get me started. Yeah. Funny you should mention that. I had a program called Don't Get Me Started, and it was anyway, that's another thing altogether.
Yeah. So, I'm full of admiration for people who've been involved in the business for as long as we have, and that are still as enthusiastic about being creative and still want to do new things all the time. That's another thing that was a big thing in our period, was to be as free thinking as possible. And actually, there was enough support from record companies to allow you to develop your craft in the public eye. Mm-hmm. And look, I mean, you've still got a profession which you enjoy and hopefully will pay a certain amount of bills. Now, 40 years on, how many young musicians now are going to have that? I doubt it very much.
They'll find other ways, but the other ways are getting, you know, they're closing in on them. They seem to be getting squeezed. And you know what I think is going to happen, Martin? I think we're going to go back to the underground again. Underground music again.
Oh, I really hope so.
People. Yeah, so do I. So do I. Because they deserve to be heard. When I was with Elizabeth from as Bad Barbie, both her and I, we made it a pact that we would play people's music, new music, on our TWR.
Yeah.
And I would have a one to watch, and she would play, you know, friends, family, and whatever. And you know, amongst all the other stuff that we played as well, which people knew and stuff. But we had that platform for doing that. Then we were quite popular on TWR as a result. And it would, because who else is doing that? There's not very many people that are doing that. I know 365 Radio doing it, Dawn Parry. And I know there's a few others that are doing it. I mean, I'm sure Eddie does it. But you like to hear new music. And people do like to hear new music. And it wasn't. We weren't a one-trick pony. We would play anything from indie to ska to blues to soul to anything, you know?
Exactly.
And we'd bring them in, you know? We'd bring them in. We had a lovely band called Pun come in, and there was just a two-piece. And I ended up doing a couple of shows with them in the end, you know? It's that
really?
Kind of thing. Yeah. Instead of fact, we've written three songs together. So
apart from the Rewind and the festival thing, are you doing any touring at the moment?
I just did something with, we're creating something called Do You Want to Hear a Story? And Do You Want to Hear a Story is me and Elizabeth. And we also DJ as well. We've got our own kind of like equipment and stuff. We go out and do stuff. And the idea is it's going to be like some form of, you know, some kind of package where it's like a question and answers thing.
Oh, nice.
And all about, you know, all about our experiences of the 80s and, yeah, a lot of people like the stories. They do like the stories. They love the stories of TWR. So, you know, and every show that I do and that Liz is involved in, it is interactive. So it's going to be a bit of an interactive thing. And then we're just going to rock the night away.
I think that's a great idea. I like those shows where it's kind of a mixture of talk and performance and just human engagement, for God's sake. We missed all that in COVID,
didn't we?
So, yeah, have you got any, I'm not sure, people ask you all the time, but have you got any interesting stories from your period of extreme fame that you can share that aren't too disturbing or filthy? Actually, I don't care if they're filthy or disturbing.
Go for it. I've got all of those, all of the above. What's the funniest one? I think I tell this story all the time, but I never tire of saying it. Okay. Right. First one that comes to mind. I've already told you about how I got into the business.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm strong into the business now. And what was I in the Bell Stars? I just left the Bell Stars. And I'm hanging out with a guy called Steve Strange. Of course, you know Steve.
I know Steve.
Yeah. Those, he was one of my dearest friends at that time. So I'm hanging out with him and Phil Lynott. And the three of us are going on the first Virgin Airways first ever flight from London to New York.
And
because it was the first one, and Richard Branson was all like music and everything else, and it was Virgin Airways, Virgin Records transitioning into this new thing.
Yeah.
He was going to have the place full with models, artists, poets, magicians, you name it. They've all got to be pop stars, this, that, they've all got to be famous. Actors, actresses. So, of course, the night before, we're at Steve's place in Maryville, and we're doing things that we shouldn't have been doing. Anyway, we were young and foolish. I don't want to glamorize that kind of stuff. Anyway, but we did, and we were off of our faces, and as you can imagine. And then what happened was, and then it was daylight coming up.
I've been in that situation.
We haven't even organized the car, this, that, and the other. Feeling on it now. Don't worry, he says, I've got a car, it's outside. And I was like, he never told us, and we were like, what? So it's outside. And so I looked outside, and sure enough, there was a car outside, 1950s, huge headlights. It was so cool. And there was a chauffeur. And she said, the only chauffeur thing about him was like the hat. Everything else was ripped jeans, scraggy hair, you name it. And he looked like he just stepped out of Spinal Tap. I kid you not. Anyway, so we're just like, well, we've got the transport. So we're throwing all the stuff into our little bags because we had to spend a weekend over there in New York. And we run down the stairs, jump in the car, everything else, zoom down to the airport. 5 minutes before we get to the airport, the car's like, chukun, chukun,
chukun.
We're like, So he was like, crash me, like, right, where's your bag? Let's go. Oh, well, he hardly had anything. But he says, grab my bag, grab me something, let's go. So where Steve was, we ran to the airport, and we missed the call. We missed the first call. And where they're over the tannoy, they're calling up yesterday. So they were calling up, and it was the last one. And anyway, we got there, and all the people were running us through, rushing us through. The plane was still waiting for us. We couldn't believe it. And then we got to, up the stairs into the aircraft, and then everyone was looking at us with faces like thunder. And we were just like,
too cool.
We just sheepishly went into the thing. That's a good story. Holly Johnson was there. Everybody was there.
Yeah, man. I once got on the wrong flight, thanks to our manager. We were going to Los Angeles, and he was so busy talking, and he was off his tits as well. we ended up getting on a flight that was leaving at approximately the same time on a different airline that was going via Philadelphia and St. Louis. So it took an extra 12 hours.
Wow.
Oh, my God. If I was a violent person... Anyway, we got there.
Yeah.
So which of your work, musical work that you've done, are you most proud of?
Peeping Tom.
Sorry, say that again.
When he's a Peeping Tom, you wouldn't know.
Oh, Peeping Tom, right.
Yes, but I did an album. I was trying to think of a copy there. I did an album, a Scar album.
Right.
And because I like Scar, as well, and it's easy for me to write. And I was hanging out with some incredible musicians at the time. And one of them was a guy called Chico Shagaz. He's an incredible artist. And he's one of those annoying people that plays every instrument perfectly, and he's awards in his own country in Brazil. And then Adrian Sherwood, he's a very good friend of mine, top producer of that kind of music and dub. And the guy called, I don't know if you ever heard of a guy called Skip McDonald. His name is usually Little Axe, and he's an extremely amazing blues player. And he you know, and he did a lot of stuff with the Sugar Hill Gang. Remember the Sugar Hill Gang?
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So he was in those, in that fantastic artist. And we ended up having a fabulous, you know, time writing the album. And I did it from scratch and got a few more people in. And that's the one I'm most proud of, because I actually did it myself. And it's an album that I can say is my own, and a lot of people. And the thing about that album is I only did 1,000 copies of that particular album.
Did you?
Yeah. Only for the fans. And I held 100 back, because you know what it's like, Martin. People, you know, they're always asking you for pictures or this or that. So sometimes I give somebody, especially the other day, somebody said, "Oh, I don't suppose you've got the Beef and Tom album anymore. My dog's eaten my one." And I just, okay. So I sent him one. But people like you to do competitions, you know, or they just, so you send them a little something, and so I'll just keep it that kind of stuff. And then I've got a few copies for other things, you know.
Oh, that's nice.
It's going to be re-released, but differently. But no one will ever get this copy. No one will ever get the artwork. No one will ever get it. I just did it specifically for the fans.
I like limited edition stuff. And numbered and signed, all that stuff.
Yeah.
So this has been great. Thank you so much for doing it. So I need to ask you some stupid smash hits type questions now.
Yes.
I ask everyone.
She is.
Bring back smash hits is what I say.
Yeah, so do I.
Yeah. So what's your favourite film? It's not a test. You can say anything you want. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's a strange one because, I don't know. You know what it is? You know what it is, Martin? I don't watch TV. And funny enough, I just written a song called I Don't Watch TV. And so it's so long ago since I watched TV or anything at all, that I find it hard to remember what it is I have seen. Come back to me. Give me another one. I'll see where I go.
All right. Okay. I was going to ask you what's your favourite TV show, so I won't bother with that one. What's your favourite book?
I'm not very good at this, am I? So I used to be great at smashing. What is my favourite? I have too many. And what can I say? Oh, my God. I like it. Oh, God. What is the bloody name of it? I can't remember the name of it. Sorry. Can you ask me another one? How many of you want to ask?
We're doing great here, aren't we? okay. Well, an unfulfilled ambition.
It'll never happen, this unfulfilled ambition.
But tell me.
No, because the person's dead.
Oh.
Well, there's two unfulfilled ones, actually. One was to go back in time and...
I don't think that's going to happen.
No. Well, yeah, I don't know. The modern technology these days that are coming in. Listen, that's a whole other story. That's a whole other story. But no, Martin, Eartha Kitt.
I love Eartha Kitt.
Can you hear my phone? Jolly good. As long as you can't, it doesn't matter.
I can't.
Anyway, so that can go away. So Eartha Kitt, I met her. Now, there's a story. That's another story for another day. But I would have loved to have done a song with her. She was a lovely woman. You would have loved her, Martin.
Yeah.
Really down to earth, honest to goodness, fantastic soul. You know, so, but yeah. So
she's also the best Catwoman ever. Nathan Roll.
I think so.
Okay. Who's your favourite other musical artist?
I have a few, but it would have been David Bowie. And because the thing is, I met David, and I think they wanted me to do some kind of dancing on their on their video. I can't remember the name. And I said, no, what an idiot.
Oh, no, why do you do that?
Because I was doing too many drugs upstairs with my crazy friends, you know, and I just, oh, they're stupid, you know. Anyway, and he was a lovely guy as well. But the reason why I like David is because he moved with the times.
Yeah, of course.
He was always relevant on each generation change.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was marvellous. I just thought, how do you do that and stay relevant? And he stayed relevant till the day he died.
Well, his final album was a work of genius, I think. Sad, yeah, but it's a work of genius. Okay, here's a good question. Do you like visual arts?
Try me.
No, I'm just saying, if some people really like going to galleries and stuff. And they've
No. I do.
Okay,
I do.
Who's your favourite artist?
David Hopper.
Okay.
And Banksy.
Yeah, actually.
Banksy, because I'm a political, I have political Tourette's. If you hung out with me, you'd understand why,
I'm a big socialist myself. I was a Corbyn supporter. I actually interviewed Corbyn for the podcast. So, I am completely, don't get me started on politics. We are definitely in the shit. So, anyway, anything I can do personally as an individual to help my fellow man, I will do it. And
the
closest philosophy to that is socialism for me. Anyway, if you had gone down a different path, what do you think an alternative career for you might have been?
That's a very good question. That's not a smash hit.
No, it's not. I start off with a stupid one, and then we do the deep cuts, right? So,
what a good. I'd imagine. The thing is, it's very hard a question to answer because you know you've gone down that path. I'd imagine it would have always been something in speaking, Martin. And the reason why I say that is because prior to being in the Bell Stars, I was a telephonist. And back in those days, you could get untold work as a telephonist, get paid really well, and just to be a telephonist. And in those days, it was those things with the ropes and everything else. And if you put the thing in your mouth, you get an electric shock and all that kind of stuff. And, I think to myself, well, the thing that has made my bread and butter is my speaking.
Yeah,
I've always spoken, and that's paid.
Have you ever done acting?
Yes, funny you know, I'm doing a play now. I'm doing a play. Yeah,
cool. You've got a mellifluous voice. I love that word, by the way. Mellifluous.
Oh, mellifluous. Oh, I don't want.
It means sonorous. It means well modulated. You know, kind of thing.
Oh, really?
I can always tell if I meet somebody in a pub or something. I can always tell if they're a singer or not. Just by the way they speak.
Really?
Yeah.
Just people say to me, "Are you a singer?" And yeah, how did you know that?
You have a beautiful modulated way of speaking, which creates interest in the person you're talking to.
Wow. I have to have a look.
You should do some voiceover work for like...
Never done it.
You should do it. You should register with an agency. You should do it. Come on,
you've got me going. I've never even thought about it.
You've got a lovely voice. You've got a rich timbre, which is quite unusual.
And
it's animated, so it could really work. You got the kind of voice that if you were in Hollywood, they would probably be seeking you out to do voices for animated characters or something.
Maybe I'm off to Hollywood. No, I don't like it. I don't like rubbing shoulders with the Hollywood people. Yeah, nefarious characters. And all. But I should take that.
You should look into it. There's money in them, though, Hills. I'm telling you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Next question. We're nearly at the end. What's a kind of epiphanal moment for you in your life? A moment of realization or something that really like change the direction of your life, or a light bulb moment, or anything?
It's going to be a bit sad when I say it anyway. It's very important that I say it.
Yeah.
It's actually in my book too. The day that my ex-boyfriend commits suicide.
Oh, shit.
Mm-hmm. That was a heavy moment. And you know what, Martin? You could be going on in your life, just going on in your life. And all of a sudden, something like that hits you. You realize, wow.
How fragile it was.
How important a person's life is, how important life is in general, and how, you know, and how important it is to be grateful and appreciate what you've got.
Yes.
And that took me down a spiritual thing. I mean, I'm not religious in any way, shape, or form, but at the time I had gone down the spiritual journey. It was actually thrust into me, into my way, and I'm glad it probably saved my life, because I too wanted to commit suicide at that time.
Wow.
Very suicidal. Yeah. And then I went through that and came out the other side, and that changed my path.
Right. That's a great answer. I mean, it's a sad answer, but you know, because a lot of the things about the podcast, questions and particularly that I ask is to give, I like to approach things from a humanist perspective, and I think we have to embrace, all of us have to embrace the full range of human experience. It's not just the happy things, it's not the shiny poppy things, it's everything. And I think the more that people realize they're not on their own in suffering, the more chance they have to heal. Yeah, that's what I think. On a much lighter note, what is your favourite synthesizer?
My favourite synthesizer?
Yes. I have to ask everybody.
Is a Moog. Is a Moog.
Yes.
That's it then. I love that sound.
That'll do. Yeah, of course. Of course, yeah.
Is a Hammond a synthesizer?
No, no, not really, no.
No, then it's a Moog. It has to be. I love that.
Yeah, the Moog bass, Moog bass is the best synthesizer bass, I think.
But that's a great sound.
Jenny, Eugenie, however you wish to be called. Are we calling you Eugenie or Jenny?
Jenny.
I like Eugenie as a name, though. Yeah. It's been an absolute joy. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. This will be coming out in the next few weeks, and I'm sure people will be thrilled to hear what you're up to.
Yeah. So,
and hopefully we'll bump into each other. I live in Marylebone. You're still in London, are you?
Wow, I'm in Camden. You're up the road from me.
I used to live in Primrose Hill until 2 years ago, for 30 years. So.
Wow. Yeah. But I think you might be doing something in Northwich soon or something, in one of these places.
Yeah, that rings a bell.
Yeah, and I think I might be doing something at the same time. So
then we'll give each other a hug when we see you.
Conversation. Yes, we will do.
All right, darling. Thank you so
lovely
much.
Lovely to see you.
Yeah, you
and
too.
You too, Martin.
Bye.
Okay.
Well, that's Jenny. Very interesting woman. Lovely. Good company. Another tale from the 80s of, you know, having fun, success, excess. I didn't realise she had a book out. That's my poor research. But I should imagine it's very interesting. And some really sad elements to it as well, as she discussed. Looking forward to hearing from you all. If you want to email me, electronicallymartin@gmail.com. Or contribute to my Patreon page to help me keep this interesting, free, and to pay for the production of it. It's patreon.com/electronicallyhours. And thanks to all the patrons who are helping to support keeping this going for free for everyone. Another great guest next week. Looking forward to it. See you later. Bye. This is from Mike Worley. Yo, Martin. Fucking brilliant book, man. Just in the track-by-track bit now. Had no idea you were into immersive and 3D since 2000 either. I do video and XR stuff. The way you spoke about socialism, family and community rang very true for me. Really enjoying the new, to me, Human League
H17BEF and other rarities it's enabled me to seek out. It's been a joy, thanks. It strikes me that my son's 2020 retrospacey sci-lo-fi lockdown ignition anthem might be your cup of Kahlua. Wow. Trevor Horn, following him on SoundCloud, must mean something. He's just finished a music technology BSc, got a first at UWE Bristol, and I was wondering if he had any advice, blah, blah, blah. I can't get into that right now.
We'll check it out, though.
We'll check it out.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
This is from Steve Gunto. Hello, Martin. First of all, thanks for such a wonderful show in Boston recently. It was great. Sorry for how they set up the chairs and table. Smiley face.
It's a very small room, just two chairs and one table.
Yeah, chairs and table. After the show, I made it a point to join your Patreon website.
Thank you.
Thank you. Your podcast is such a great look into the lives of all your interesting guests. Just finished the Stephen J. Lipson one. All have been great. Only suggestion I could hope for would be Alan Wilder.
Meh.
That's Martin says meh. Cheers and stay well, Steve Gumto. Pronounced Gumto.
Gumto.
Thank you, Steve.
This is Jeffrey Barker. Hello, Martin. I just signed up on Patreon. Thank you very much, Jeffrey. For the price of a cup of coffee a day. Not a day.
No,
a cup of coffee a month.
Well,
cup of coffee a day. If you want to contribute a cup of coffee a day, that'd be great.
Yeah.
I love...
Flat white.
Cortado. I love Electronically Yours. My favourite so far are the interviews with Glenn, Will Sargent and Pete Wiley. Your interviewing style is superb. I wrote this. I recently was lucky enough to attend Heaven 17's performance at the Birchmere in Virginia, USA. Of course, the show was as brilliant as I could have hoped for. I even got my picture taken with you and Glenn. See you below. Unfortunately, this is the best bit. I confess I had eaten a cannabis cookie and consumed some beers during the performance, which might explain my embarrassingly bizarre facial expression in the picture.